Morning, everyone. Today's daf from Bamzir Zayin Aleph. We are behind. We're starting the Mishnah today on Samach Tes Amud Beis. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We start this morning with a Mishnah. The Mishnah begins Shaman Parva Chamor V'Chol Dover Shuah Osev Ochel Lamechsa. So what you could do is you could do an appraisal of an animal. So the animal is a large animal. It's either a cow or it's a donkey, and anything which is Osev Ochel, anything which is going to be able to work, and and what you could do then is you can make an arrangement where you're going to be dividing the profits. What profits are we talking about? Rashi describes the profits that we're describing is lachlok shevach sheyashbich bedamim uviv lados. So we're talking about improvement of the animal. The animal is now going to grow in size because you're going to take care of it. In addition to that, also the offspring. So basically, once again, we are back to discussing some sort of business venture where you're taking an animal of somebody's, you're looking to work it, and you're looking to divide the profits. So makom shenagu lachlok zavlados miyad cholkin. So in terms of how long of a period of time are you going to be taking care of the offspring? So the Mishnah says really it's a function of minhag makom. It depends on what the various customs are. If the custom is that pretty much immediately after the birth the children are divided, the offspring are divided, so then you do so immediately, Rashi points out, like we learned yesterday. Doesn't mean super immediately. In other words, you have to take care of the infants. You have to allow the infants to spend some time with its mother, 30-50 days, like we learned yesterday. But basically the point is that if the division of the offspring are happening right away, so then the expectation is, if that's the custom, so then it's divided amongst the partners. Again, they're not really partners. It's a venture. So, but anyway, makom shenagu lagadol yagdilu. If, however, the predominant custom of the community is to invest, and then what do you do with the dividends? You take the dividends and you reinvest the dividends. So that's going to be the minhag as well. Like we learned yesterday, again, a good review when we're talking about reinvestment of the dividends. So, in terms of the business structure, the dividends themselves are viewed as a new business structure, and so therefore, those the half of the animals that were yours are the offspring obviously belong to you, but of the second generation now that you are breeding one more time, so those children are going to be divided once again between you and the owner. Rishim Gamliel Amir Shaman Egel Imimo V'Sach Im Imo. Rishim Gamliel says that if the calf is together with its mother and the sach is together with the mother, so in other words, there is very little effort over there, because in terms of the offspring are basically being taken care of the mother. So if you already committed yourself to taking care of the mother, so there is very little effort that you need to do in terms of taking care of the offspring. And this is a consideration regarding the management fee, which we've been discussing extensively last number of days. And then the last line of the Mishnah, which is going to engender discussion in the Gemara, is the following. You could be mafriz. Rashi spends a little bit of time working out this word mafriz. Mafriz is a word that you'll see now and then throughout the Gemara. Rashi gives two explanations of what it means. Mafriz says, number one, Rashi, is that it's talking about growth and increase. Right, Rashi, Dibra Amaschal Mafriz Al Sadeo, Rashi writes, Lashon Parva V'Rava. It grows and increases. And but Rashi says, but really the truth of the matter is that I have a different explanation of the word. It's with a Zion, and it means Marchiv U'Magdil. Rashi says it means to widen. Rashi gives a couple of examples. Magdil Kamo Prazos Teshev Yushalayim, right? Right, the Areha Prazos. I mean, Rashi doesn't quote it, but in other words, in the Megillah, we find that word very often. It means that there are cities that do not have walls around them. So, V'chem Atzina Benida Lo Kelo Shehifriz Amidosav. Hillel, who was too, who literally his measures were too wide, meaning that he was too liberal, too open. Anyway, but point being is as follows. Okay, now that we spent some time on the word, the point being is as follows. If I rent out a property, so and I loan the renter money, so what I'm entitled to do is I'm allowed to increase the rent. Okay, and the Gemara is going to discuss, isn't that a violation of Ribbis? And we're going to be discussing that as well. So let's start right away. Tan Rabbanan Mafris Asadeh Venechoshesh Mishum Ribis. First half of the Mishnah does not engender any discussion in the Gemara. First half of the Mishnah are basically points that we made previously regarding Iska, regarding setting up a business structure and giving somebody capital in order to work with, and how it's divided, and what the Minhagim are regarding raising of the offspring. So we are done with that topic vis-a-vis the Gemara. The Gemara, however, is going to be focusing on the last part of the Mishnah, and that is as follows. So again, I have a tenant. He asks me for a loan. I lend the money, and I increase the rent. Okay, sounds like a problem of ribis, right? I just lent the money, and I'm going to get an extra benefit, and that is increased rent. The Mishnah says, mutter, the Mishnah says it's permissible, and obviously we need an explanation of why it should be permissible. So first and foremost, the Braisa, Gemara is going to quote a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to explain, A, what exactly is an example of Mafris al-Sadosav, and B, why should it be permissible? We start with the Gemara. Excuse me. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the following Braisa, Mafris al-Sadosav, v'nechoshim mishum ribis. We're not concerned about ribis. So Ketzad, so let's give an example. Asochis asad mechaver basar kurim chitim l'shanam. So first of all, the rental agreement of the property is that you, the renter, are going to pay me 10 kor of wheat per annum. Okay, and that is the rent. Fine. Now, the renter says to the owner of the land, do me a favor, I could use a loan. Let me 200 zuz. And what I'm going to do with the 200 zuz is, I'm going to improve the land. So in other words, it is a loan, but earmarked for land improvement. Under those circumstances, I'm going to allow you to increase my rent to 12 kor a year. So now that means that the owner of the land is going to be getting an additional 2 kor, and of course, full repayment of the loan. So mutter, under those circumstances, it is permissible. But you cannot do the same thing regarding a store and regarding a boat. Okay, let's take a look at Rashi together. why is it permissible? Rashi over here gives us really the answer. Rashi dibra maschal mutter ve'enzo ribis char maos. This is not considered extra reward for the money that you're allowing the borrower to hold on to. Ela shechocher mimenu sadeh mishubachas umma'al alo bechachirus sadeh tova yoser misadeh ra'ah. You see, because the loan over here is earmarked for land improvement, so basically what we're expecting is as follows. What is the lender / owner of the land expecting? Now that he's given the renter money, and now that the money is going to land improvement, so now you know what this is, it's a new land. It's a better land. And with an improved land, so what can you expect? Meaning, I was renting you it out for 10 kor a year because that was the kind of land that it was. But now that I gave you money to invest into the property, improve the property, so now there is a fair expectation that the property is going to yield more. And therefore is within the right of the owner of the land, who is also the lender, to expect more rent. So because the loan is earmarked specifically for land improvement, so therefore the owner can expect more in terms of rent, and it does not violate the issue of ribis. However, when it comes to a store, when it comes to a boat, right? Rashi, let's take a look at the next Rashi. You see, if I rent a boat, why do you think I'm borrowing money? I'm borrowing money because I'd like to take the boat and do some sort of business venture. But the rental of the boat and the loan have nothing to do with one another. See, since the money is not earmarked for the improvement of the boat or for the improvement of the store, and it really is an independent loan, so therefore any extra increased rent that I get is going to be really extra. It'll be a bonus on the loan that I gave. And so the only reason why I'm getting increased rent is because I lent the money. So that's ribis, and that's not good. Okay, so so that is the pshat in the Gemara as per Rashi. Amar Rav Nachman, we're back to the Gemara. Amar Rava Baravu Apam Mishum Afres Achanos Latzur Bo Tzura Sfina Asos Bo Iskarya Chanos Latzur Bo Tzurasa. Sorry, Asos Bo Iskarya. So the Gemara says, however, if we're basically going to talk about the store renter borrowing money for improvement of the store, and the boat renter borrowing money for improvement of the boat, so then we can make the same argument that we made regarding the land. If you're investing the money into the improvement of the boat itself, so therefore there is a fair expectation that you can increase the rent, because now the store is a better store and the boat's going to be a better boat. So Chanel Tzatzor Boat Sarasa Tzavu Boy Inchi Bahavi Agra Tfe Sfina Lasosal Iskara Kevin Shapira Iskara Tfe Agra Tfe Sfinasa. So the Gemara says basically that improvement of the store, repainting the store, drawing nice pictures on the store. Improvement of the boat, putting a new mast on the boat, whatever the case is, once you're improving the actual boat and store itself, so much like the land, then the owner is entitled to ask for more rent, because it is an improved store, an improved boat, and therefore it's justified in asking for more rent. Amar Rav. Okay. Agra Upagra. Okay, when you rent out a boat, recent Chol HaMoed, I forgot which one. Rented a boat and took it out over the intercoastal with my family. So the amount of waivers you have to sign, and all the promises that you make in terms of what if you break the boat. So it's whatever. I don't read it. So I'm in good shape. So I'm sure I'm like most people. But anyway, agra upagra. So Rav says is that when you're renting a boat, so what you can demand is you can demand some sort of schar, meaning that's a rental, and also pagra. What you can also demand is that if there's any depreciation of the boat, so you can demand that as well. Now, let's be clear. It seems to be a little bit unfair. You see, when I rent something, there's a built-in expectation that I don't have to pay depreciation. I rent a car. Obviously, there's going to be wear and tear on the car that I rent. That's included in the rental. That's why I pay rent. I pay rent because he owns it and, you know, he's allowed to charge for it. And also, there's an implied understanding that there's going to be depreciation. And I am going to be paying the rent in order to subsidize part of that depreciation. It's factored into the rent. What Rav is allowing the boat rental to do is both. A, collect some sort of rent, and B, if there's a depreciation, so the renter is going to be covering that depreciation as well.
He translates damages, not depreciation.
We can go both, meaning I'll accept both. So, right. My idea of depreciation is similar to the damages, but basically, if it goes down in value, either because of depreciation or because of damages, you got to pay that as well. So the Gemara says agra upagra. So the Gemara says, so amr le rav kanav ravasi le rav. So e agra lo pagra e pagra lo agra. So you said, they say to Rav, well, I don't understand. Shouldn't it be one or the other? And Rashi points out, Ipagra lo agra, sorry, let's go to the first Rashi. Iagra lo pagra kevin denotos chayin lo litvo demei shvirasa. Meaning if you're paying for rent and the boat breaks. Now, we're not talking about boat breaking because of negligence. If the boat breaks because of negligence, of course you're on the hook. It means that the boat broke on its own. Right? It could be an ones, it could be just simply machmas malachto. In other words, on its own, nothing to do with your mishandling of the boat. So if you're renting it, so you don't have to pay for that. A socher, a renter, does not have to pay for ones and does not have to pay for mesa machmas malachto. So just simply because it broke does not mean you're on the hook. That's why you're paying the rent. And let's go the other direction. Ipagra lo agra, Rashi. Me'achir sheshama b'damim shim tisha b'yesh lo damim, havilei mavagabe, v'aveschara ribis. And let's say that I agree with you, that what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out your boat. And if it breaks for whatever reason, or if it depreciates for whatever reason, we're going to assess the value of it right now, and I will make myself wholly responsible for any downgrade in price that it goes. Depreciation, breakage, I'm going to pay for that. So now basically, what are we looking at right now? To a certain degree, it's almost like a loan. In other words, while I'm holding onto the boat, I am now going to be on the hook to pay for him for any price drop.
Isn't that a sucker?
like a socher? No, with renter, you pay the rent, and that's it. In other words, and then you're going to be, and once you pay rent, you're going to be free and clear from paying for depreciation, or if the boat breaks, meaning again, not by negligence. So then you're going to be exempt. Over here, however, you accept upon yourself from the very beginning that I'm going to be paying any drop in price for whatever reason. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then once you're paying a rental fee, so that's going to be in addition to the obligation which you already owe. And now we are basically talking about some form of ribis, because you took his boat with the full expectation of paying back whatever its appraised value is, and you're giving him rent. Well, that's ribis that you're not allowed to do. So they basically turned to Rav and they said to Rav, well, you can't do both. You can't have him pay rent and be fully responsible for any depreciated value of the boat. It's either one or the other. So Shasik Rav. So Rav at that point in time was quiet, meaning the students were right, seemingly. And he didn't know how to justify his position. So I'm Rav Sheshes my Tamash Shasik Rav, Lo Shmiel Lehad Tanya. So the Gemara says, well, I don't know. I'm sorry. So Rav Papa, Rav Sheshes said, you know, I don't understand Rav's silence, meaning Rav really did not have something to respond, and that's the following. Let's consider the following price. Now, what you cannot do is you cannot accept Tzom Barzal Miyisrael. Now, Tzom Barzal is a term that we see all the time, but not exactly in this context. Tzom Barzal is usually the term that we describe when a woman goes into marriage and she brings in certain properties into the marriage, and she would like to assess it as Tzom Barzal. And that means that what they're going to do at the wedding is they're going to appraise, right? This is all before the actual... You know, this is before the fun part of the wedding. This is what the Gemara described elsewhere as the fighting before the wedding. So the and that is that you take whatever she wants to bring into the marriage, assess its value, put that value into the ksuva, and the husband will be wholly responsible for the full value of that item. Meaning the husband can make full use of that item, but he will be at the termination of the marriage be fully responsible to pay back its assessed value assessed at the time of the wedding. That's how we normally describe Tzom Barzal, which is accurate. Over here in this context, however, we're talking Tzom Barzal as a business venture. And what I do is I give you sheep. But before I give you the sheep, we go and get him appraised. Now, by the way, parenthetically, is an interesting note. Rashi over here says, you know why I think it's called Tzom Barzal? Which, by the way, means iron sheep. So Rashi says, because generally speaking, Rashi speculates, right? Rashi says, Valinira. Generally speaking, Rashi says, I think it's because this is how people generally would do this kind of business arrangement with sheep. So in other words, since the minhag was that it was done with sheep, so therefore this term was developed of Tzom Barzal. Okay, anyway. Interesting historical note. So basically, it's a business venture where we assess the value of the sheep. I give you the sheep. Now, because we assess the value, so you, the manager of this of the sheep, are going to be wholly responsible for paying me back the principal value of the sheep assessed at the time when I gave them to you. That's not good in terms of a legitimate business venture, Jew to Jew. Because what are we looking at right now? We're looking at a business venture where, for the financier, it represents no risk. A risk-free venture from the standpoint of the financier, and then he's going to be taking profit on top of that, that's called ribis. You're not allowed to do that. So, the brisa starts off. Ain't mekablin tzom barzal miyisrael, ava mekablin tzom barzal minan achrim. So you can't take it from a Jew because that would violate ribis, but you can take it from a non-Jew because there is no issur of ribis when it comes to Jew to non-Jew. Aval amru hasham par lachaver v'amala hare paschcha asuya alai v'shoshim dinar. But let's say we do the following. Let's say that I am about to give a cow over to another person to manage, and we assess the price of the cow when it comes out to 30 dinar. V'ani alacha sela b'chodesh. And now, after assessing the price of the cow, I say to him, and this is how much it's going to cost. It'll cost one sela per month. So under these circumstances, mutter, it's permissible. Lefi shelo asa damim. Because what we didn't do is we didn't assess its value at the beginning. Now, the end of the brisa seems incomprehensible because the brisa described how we did assess the price at the beginning. But from and obviously the Gemara is going to deal with that in just a moment. But right now, basically, we have supported Rav based on this Braisa. Now we don't understand the Braisa yet, and that's not a minor detail. But we now have defended Rav because remember, what did Rav say? When you rent out a boat, so what you could do is you can assess its value, its full value at the time of the rental, and then you'll tell the person who's renting, A, you'll give me rent, and B, if it drops down any value, you're going to pay me that back as well. And we were bothered by that because basically what it turns into is basically a form of ribis, where now he's borrowing the boat and responsible for its full value, and he's paying rent. Sounds like ribis. So whatever, and that's what the student said to Rav. That sounds like ribis. And now, again, we don't know what the Braisa means yet, but the Braisa seems to be okay with it, because in this venture, we allowed the full assessment of the animal for 30 dinar, and then we also allowed him to collect rent as well. Okay, so, however we're going to learn the Braisa, but certainly it sounds like it sounds supportive of Rav. How we understand the Braisa, well, that's what we're up to right now. So the Gemara says, V'lo asa? So the Gemara says, now what does it mean the price of the animal was not appraised at the beginning? It was. The Braisa described it being appraised at the beginning. So Amrav Sheshes lo asa damim mechayim ala la'achar misa. So the Gemara says, well, there's an important detail that was left out of the Braisa. The person who's renting the animal is not going to be paying the 30 salim for depreciation. That's not going to happen. Meaning, if he's renting the animal, simply what that means is that he's paying the rent for the animal. And if the animal depreciates, well, that's part of any rental agreement. In other words, that's life. Things depreciate. What it means is that if the animal were to die, so then the renter will take it upon himself that under those circumstances, he's going to be liable for its full value. So basically, what the renter is doing is he's taking on an extra level of protection against the owner. But it's not going to be that he is taking every financial responsibility, including depreciation. No. Depreciation is included in the rent. It just simply means that if the animal dies, he's going to pay that back. Now, normally a renter doesn't do that. Again, assuming that it was not his negligence that caused the death. It died me'onis, it died machmas malacha, but this renter agreed to do that, and that's fine. And that's what the Braisa means. And so, in defense now of Rav, we could say the same thing regarding the boat. Meaning, if the boat just simply goes down in value because you made use of the boat, so then the renter doesn't pay for that. The only reason why we're assessing the value of the boat at the beginning is that if the boat breaks, then the renter is going to pay for it. Okay.
It's much more to pay back the entire value of the boat than it is to pay a little depreciation. You're paying a lot, right? The renter is paying the whole value of the boat. That's a lot of risk.
I agree. In other words, if the renter is ready to take on that kind of risk, so he could do that.
But why is that permitted?
It would be prohibited if he's ready to take on the rent and the depreciation. Because once you're taking on both, so that now means that when you're taking the boat, that's a loan. Because now you're responsible to pay full value back of the boat. And then on top of that, you're also giving now the lender rent as well. That's ribis.
No downside for that.
Right. Right. But if the renter is ready to accept, I'm sorry, if the owner of the boat is ready to accept depreciation, so then we're talking about a regular rental contract, but the renter is just adding one more clause in the contract, which obviously for him represents more risk, and that is if the boat breaks, I'll pay for the boat. I'm Rav Papa Hilchos Sfina Agro Papa. So Rav Papa says that this is in fact the halacha, is that when you're renting a boat, so you can assess it at the time in terms of how much its value is, and you can assume, and the renter is going to have to assume that, and he's also going to pay rent as well. But now, B'nai Kufra, Agra B'shas Mashicha, Pagra B'shas Shvira, and the B'nai Kufra, who were boat owners, so that's basically what they did. In fact, they collected rent on the front end, and if the boat broke, they collected that payment on the back end. So, Atu Ben Hagatali Milson, so the Gemara says, now, that's their custom, but should their custom be dictating the halacha? So the Gemara says, no. Mishum Demasisa Tanya Min Haga. Now the Gemara says, no, correction. Because we learned in the Braisa that this is fair practice, so therefore the B'nai Kufra did so in such a manner. Okay. We are on the very top of Ayin Amidal for continuing the Gemara. Amar Vana Namar Shmuel Moshe Yisomim Mutal Avos Meribis. If you are the custodian of money of orphans, you can lend that money out with interest to other Jews. To which the Gemara says, Amar Le Rav Nachman Shem Dias Meninu Sfina Sapina Luhui Sirei. So the Gemara asks the obvious question. I know they're orphans. I know they are in a very tenuous situation of life. And I understand that we are interested in taking care of them, taking care of the estate. But that doesn't justify violating an Isra in the Torah, or even an Isra midrabanan. It seems very strange. So Yasmi da'achle da'labdidu le'zubasa shavkayu. And then the Gemara makes an extraordinarily strong statement. And that is, if we're going to take the money of the orphans and use it in order to invest by lending with interest to other Jews, so the orphans should basically follow their parents. Now, I know it's a strong statement, but basically, you're not allowed to lend with interest. And we already discussed previously how when you lend with interest, you're going to end up losing the money. Over here, the Gemara, again, says it very strongly, you're going to lose your life as well. So how can you make any kind of suggestion that it would be permissible for the managers of the estate of orphans to take the money and lend it with interest to other Jews? That's patently prohibited. And what kind of justification is there to do that? Amalei, Amalei ezagufa du'uvdei chahave. So he says to him, look, do me a favor. You didn't hear this straight out. I'm saying it like Rashi right now. You didn't hear this straight out that you're allowed to lend money of the of orphans with interest. You didn't hear that straight out. You saw something, and you arrived at that conclusion. So do me a favor. Tell me what you saw, and then we'll see whether or not your conclusion was a good conclusion or not. So Amar Leih, so he says to him as follows. How do the Bnei Bar Mar Ukva? So there was a cauldron that was owned by the sons of Mar Ukva. Unfortunately, Mar Ukva passed away. His sons were left orphans. And so now it was somebody who took on the custodial responsibility of managing the estate. And he rented out the cauldron. Dahava be Mar Shmuel, tukel v'yayiv lei, tukel v'shakel lei. And every time that Mar Shmuel would rent out, Mar Shmuel was the administrator. So every time he would rent out the cauldron, the first thing he would do is first he would weigh it. And so therefore the renter was then going to be responsible for the full value of the cauldron, and then on top of that rent as well. So shakal agra v'shakal pachsa. And that's what Shmuel collected. He collected rent, and if there was any depreciation, he collected that as well. And again, we back to where we started this morning. Meaning that once you take on all depreciation, so then that means that you're borrowing it as a borrower. Meaning because as opposed to borrowing an item where depreciation is included in that rental, over here, you are now on the hook to pay for its depreciation. So you are now borrowing its value. And on top of that, you're paying rent. So that's ribbis. So that's what he saw Shmuel doing when administrating the property. And that's why he concluded, oh, it must be that's because it is money of the orphans, and therefore it's permissible. So he agra lo pachsa v'pachsa lo agra. And he says it can't be both, and the only reason why it's both is because you're allowed to do that. So I'm like, ya filo bedaknani na mishar lameved. So his response to him was, no, what you witnessed over there, even if you're an older orphan, right? Daknani means from the word zakan, which means beard. Meaning even if you're an orphan that's older, and you're not given, in other words, right? You're just, in other words, it's an expression meaning just a regular person who, you know, an adult. He's allowed to do that as well. You see, over there, when it comes to a cauldron is made out of nechoshes, is made out of copper. And in the case of a cauldron, it is within the realm of acceptable and permissible to not only charge rent, but also pay for its depreciation. Why? Because when the cauldron loses some of its actual copper content in the course of it being used, it's put on a fire. So not only does the fire eat away at the copper, which is quote-unquote normal depreciation, but it also attacks the remaining copper as well. And so therefore, it's within the realm of permissibility that not only can you does it expect that you pay rent, but you also pay depreciation as well. So in other words, basically, you saw a particular incident and you went overboard in terms of the conclusion. It's not that you're allowed to charge rent and depreciation. It's specific to the case of the cauldron. Amar Rav Bar Shila, Amar Rav Chisav Amila, Amar Rav Bar Yosef Bar Chama, Amar Rav Sheshes, Malsho Yisomim Mutal Avosim Kov Vizchar Verachok Lehefseh. So, despite the fact that the Gemara previously said that there is no dispensation that's given to the estate of an orphan, and that you're not allowed to lend it with interest, and the Gemara says, apparently says you're not allowed to do that. However, the Gemara says that there is some sort of dispensation that's given out, and that is that you can take the money of orphans and you can invest it, and where it is nearly risk-free investment. Now, what have we been discussing up until now in terms of a venture? Generally, what we've been discussing is that when you give your money for somebody else to manage, so half of it will be a loan, half of it will be a deposit, and what we're going to do is we're going to split the profit, and we're going to share the loss. And that is what's called legitimate business venture. Okay, there's a management fee as well, but in other words, but just the basic structure of that business is that because we're ready to split the profits and both accept the loss, so that's legitimate. What the Gemara now is endorsing is that if it's money that belongs to an orphan, so what you can do is they can give it as a business venture, where if there's profit, the profit will be split, but if there's loss, the loss will be suffered by the manager and not by the orphans. And even though previously we said that smacks of ribis, but for the orphans, such a business venture is allowed. Tanur Rabbanan Karvus Chavarok Lehefsed Rasha. The Braisa here quotes that, in general, if you conduct business in this fashion, where you give money to somebody and you're ready to split profits but not split loss, so you are a Rasha as you are engaging in a ribis practice. Karv Lehefsed Varach Lugashar Chasid. If, let's say, you are ready to accept more loss than profit, so in other words, you, the financier, are ready to accept upon yourself a significant amount of loss. We don't talk here in percentages, but whatever the case is. And at the same time, if there's profit, you're ready to give more of the profit to the manager, so you're a chassid. In other words, you didn't have to make the business structure that way, but I guess it's almost like a, you know, it's you're pious if you do so. And then however, if you're going to do it fair, where you're going to split the profit and split the loss, so that is considered fair practice. Rabbi says to Rav Yosef, what do I do? I have money that belongs to Yisomim. What should I do with that money? So he says, well, what you're going to do is as follows. Every time the children come to you for an allocation, so you convene a Beis Din, and you allocate in front of a Beis Din, meaning to make sure that there is no misappropriation whatsoever. So Amalei v'haka kali karna. So Rabbi says to Rav Yosef, you totally misunderstood me. I wasn't talking about how to actually allocate the money to the orphans. I think I know how to do that. What I'm worried about is that if I keep just giving the capital away to the children, so eventually I'm going to exhaust the children of of the estate. And what I'm asking for is business advice. How do I make sure that we turn a profit on the money so that there will be a continual stream of money to support the orphans from their own estate? So Amalei Mar Hechiavid. So Amalei Batkin and Gavra Diaslei Dahava Pricha. So he says to him as follows. So what you're going to do is you're going to find a guy who has gold, which is comes in the form of I was going to say particles, gold fragments. Basically, find somebody that has precious metal, gold. Now take the gold from him, and what you're going to, basically as security against your loan, and what you're going to do now is you're going to take the estate of the orphans and you're going to lend them the money. But it is not, we are within the realm of prudent business, because you took a collateral against the loan. And then, the business venture that you're allowed to do is where the person who is going to manage the money is going to split the profits, but at the same time assume the loss. Now again, under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to do that, as this would violate Verbis de Rabbanan. This is a dispensation that is allowed for the estate of the orphans. Avaldavar Mesuyim Law. Don't take something specific as collateral against the loan. Because Dilma Pikadon in Uvasim are Yav Simon of Vishakalai. Because then it could be viewed as a Pikadon, and then what he, the manager, is going to do is that he's going to demand it back, saying that he only gave it as a Pikadon, not as a collateral. Okay, so Amaravi Ashi Tenachim Mishtakach Gavra Di Islay Dahavar Pricha. So all this would be great advice if we find somebody with who has gold on his hand. Ilam Mishtakach Gavra Di Islay Dahavar Pricha Nech Lezuzah Di Asme. But if I can't find such a person who cannot collateralize his loan against precious metal that he has, he doesn't have precious metal. So once again, are you telling me that I should not be investing the money whatsoever, and then basically we're going to lose the capital of the estate? So, but basically what we'll do, in lieu of the person who cannot collateralize a loan against precious metal, is we'll find somebody who, first of all, has properties, and nobody is questioning the validity of his ownership of the properties. He's going to end up managing the money. Ushar Madina de Araisa, and he follows Torah law. V'lo mekabel shamta de Rabbanan, and he was never previously excommunicated. So basically, find somebody who is both wealthy and honest. Okay, that's a trick. V'yahavina lu ni'alei bebidina, and then under those circumstances, what you could do is convene a Beis Din. Give him the money of the orphans to manage, again with the structure of karov l'schar v'rachuk mehafseid, and under those circumstances you can loan him the money, and so that he manages the money, and that would also be another way to allow the estate of the orphans to be managed. We're on the top of Ayin Amud Beis. We start now the next Mishnah. Mekamlik Stone Bars Am Yisrael Mimneshu Ribis. Okay, a point in the, that's made in the Mishnah that we've already heard before, and that is that you cannot accept Son Barzel from another Jew, because that's Max of Ribbis. Again, Son Barzel is the idea that before I'm going to give my animals over to somebody else, again, according to the Rashi earlier this morning, typically it was done with sheep. So what we're going to do is we're going to assess and appraise the value of those animals, and now the manager is going to be fully responsible for the full value of these animals if anything were to happen to those animals. So that basically means for me, no risk. Because I'm going to get my capital back under any and every circumstance. And then he's going to manage my animals, and he's going to make a profit, and I'm going to split the profit. That's ribbis. Because I assume no risk. I'm getting back my full capital in return, and I'm also going to be getting some profit. That's a no-no. So, I can do such a structured business deal together with a non-Jew, because there is no isser of ribbis when it comes to a non-Jew. V'lavin mehen umavin osam beribis. I can lend to them. I can borrow from them. Sorry, I can borrow from them and I can lend to them with interest. V'chein beger toshav, and the same thing would be true regarding a ger toshav as well. Ger toshav, a resident alien living in Israel. The various opinions amongst the Rishonim exactly what, if any, mitzvahs he has to do. He's not a ger tzedek. He's not a full convert. In other words, but he accepts himself some sort of basic. So some basic rules and guidelines. I'll say it simply: he won't be over to Avodah Zarah. Okay. Some Rishonim say that he's got to keep kosher. Okay. Whatever. Let's just leave it at he's not a convert, meaning a full convert. He's a resident alien, allowed to live in Israel, and vis-a-vis the halacha of ribbis.
If you're supposed to give him the nevelahs, you keep kosher.
Right. Okay. I know I mentioned it. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Okay. I'll strike it because I know that was a controversial opinion. Anyway, he's a resident alien, but vis-a-vis the halachas ribbis, you treat him like a non-Jew, and therefore these kinds of business deals are fine. Mal v'Yisrael ma'osav shel akum midas ha'akum avalom midas Yisrael. Now this last line of the Mishnah is unclear. It's ambiguous. I'm going to put this on hold. When we get to the Gemara later on, we will explain this line of the Mishnah. We start with the Gemara Lamema de Birshusa de Mekabel Kaime. Okay. Now, so the when I give somebody, I'm the owner of an animal, and I give it to somebody to manage. Okay. So over that course of the management period, who is considered the owner of the item? Now, in terms of title, in terms of deed, so we know. In other words, ultimately, the owner of the animal is going to get it or a full reimbursement for its value. But over the period of the management, however, there's a question of liability, responsibility. So over that management period, who is considered now its owner? Sounds like from the Mishnah, the Birushusa de Mekabel Kaime. The one who accepted is going to be considered the owner. Why? Because the Mishnah describes this as being a function of ribbis. Now, again, let's just go over to the basic definition of ribbis. Ribbis means I lend you money, and then obviously over the interim of the loan, the money is effectively yours. You're going to pay me back the money, and you're going to give me back extra on top of that. So that's a violation of ribbis. If we're looking at the same structure vis-a-vis animals, if I'm giving you the animals, and then you're going to pay me back the animals and profit, so during that interim period, the animals are effectively yours, much like the money was yours over the course of the loan. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. Or Riminu. But the Gemara says, but I'll point out the following. So the Gemara says, if you accept some barzel from a non-Jew, which from a ribbis standpoint is permitted, but we're not talking about ribbis right now. We're talking about the mitzvah of Bechara. I own an animal, it gives birth, firstborn, has kedushas Bechor. Okay. There's an entire Masechta dedicated to this topic. Okay. If I am entrusted with some barzel animal of a non-Jew, and during the interim period it gives birth, it is going to be exempt from the status of Bechor. So it means that it's still his and it's not mine. So right now, we are confused in terms of, during the management period, who is considered the owner of the animal. Vis-a-vis the halachas of ribbis, it sounds like the manager is the owner. Vis-a-vis the halachas of Bechor, it sounds like the owner is the owner. If that made sense. But in the context of our discussion, hopefully you understood. So Amar Abai Lokasha Ad Mekaba Allah Unsa Vezula Had Lokaba Allah Unsa Vezula. So what the Gemara now attempts to do is make a distinction between ukimtas, meaning perhaps we can say that there's a difference between the circumstances that involved each of these transactions. The Mishnah of Becharos is where he accepted any ones and any depreciation. So, and our Mishnah is where we did not accept any type of ones and any type of depreciation. So, as opposed to the Mishnah in Becharos, where the animal was owned by a non-Jew, he gave it to you. He said, you don't have to worry. If the animal depreciates, that's on me. If the animal, if some mishap happens, that's going to be on me. So, now, the owner of the animal, the non-Jewish owner of the animal, accepted upon himself unsa vezula, so then it still remains under the ownership of the non-Jew. Because depreciation, that's on him. Ones, that's on him. Our Mishnah is talking about where the manager accepted upon himself unsa vezula. So therefore, since he accepted upon himself any and all depreciation, so therefore it's going to be on him. So Amalei Rava, I dekaba alav mara, unsa vezula, tzom barzel karisle. So the Gemara says, could we slow down? That seems to be a very difficult shot. Because the Mishnah Becharos is talking about a case where the non-Jew gave it to you, but the non-Jew is still going to accept upon himself the responsibility of depreciation. That's not called tzom barzel. Tzom barzel by definition means that you, who are entrusted with the animal and the care of the animal, are going to be fully responsible for all value of the animal. So the Gemara says that doesn't fit the bill of tzom barzel. The ode, and furthermore, adni sevavav mekabel tzom barzel mina akom leflug b'didei by medvar mamor de lo kabel unsa vezula av a kabel mar unsa vezula shapidami. And furthermore, if we want to make a contrast, with the Gemara makes this point all the time, it is always best to make the sharpest contrast possible. And what we could do is we can make a contrast in the relationship of tzom barzel, even when given from Jew to Jew. And that is whether or not the owner accepted upon himself unsa vezula versus where the owner did not accept upon himself unsa vezula. And the Mishnah didn't need to move to a case where the owner of the animal was a non-Jew. So Allah Marava, Idivida de Lokabal Allah Mara unsa vezula. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to abandon that pshat, and we're going to say that it is a classic tzom barzel relationship. I, the owner of the animal, entrusted it to you. We assessed its value at the beginning, and you're going to be committed to fully reimburse me for anything that happens to the animal, including depreciation. a standard stone barzel arrangement. And the Gemara says, look, in terms of your typical question of who's the owner of the animal, the answer is the manager. The manager is the owner. Since it's on Barzal, since he accepted upon himself to fully reimburse for the depreciation of the animal, he's considered the owner. Fine. Our Mishnah presents no problem whatsoever. Now let's turn to the Mishnah Bechorah. So the Mishnah Bechorah says that if you're given, meaning you a Jew, are given the animal of a non-Jew in a tzon barzel structure, the animals that are born are not subject to the Kedushas Bechor. That needs a little bit of explanation, but the Gemara says, but I'll explain it. You see, we have a general rule when it comes to Kedushas Bechor, and that is, the Gemara just quoted, I know I read it quickly, Kol Yanachri Be'emtza Pater. If a non-Jew has a hand in the animal, now, not literally, but if a non-Jew has a hand in the animal, such animal giving birth to its firstborn is going to be exempt. Now, the simplest way to understand this is the following. If, let's say, an animal is owned in partnership between Jew and non-Jew, having its first offspring is not going to have conditions before. So as long as a non-Jew has any shareholding in the animal, then the firstborn is not subject to conditions before. Our Gemara is going even one step further, and that is as that even if the non-Jew is not a shareholder, but he has an ability to collect an animal for an obligation, that is also considered Yad Nachri Be'emtza, and that also will exempt the animal from the firstborn from Kedushas Bechor. And since it's a stone barzel relationship, now that means that, frankly speaking, you're going to pay him back generally in money. But if you don't have the money to pay, you're going to give him back the animal. If you don't have the animal to pay and there's offspring, he's going to take the offspring. Since the non-Jew has at least a collection ability in the animal, that is also considered Yad Nachri Be'emtza, and therefore it's going to be Pater from Kedushas Bechor. But that doesn't affect the fundamental principle, which is that during the interim, the manager is considered the owner of the animal.